Thank you for listening to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Ray Noah continues the series on Abraham with a message titled, Seeing the Invisible. Now here's Pastor Ray.
So I want to begin the message time this morning with a question, actually a few questions. And we're going to do kind of an audience survey on this. So a show of hand on each of these questions. Okay, I'll ask you to raise your hand if you can answer yes to these questions. So here's the first one. Are you ready? Show of hands on this. If you can say, don't show your hands yet. Show of hands on this. If you can say yes to this. How many of you got up this morning and you took a drink of water from your faucet absolutely confident that it was safe to drink? Raise your hand on this. Okay. That's all of us, pretty much all of us. Okay, how many of you had breakfast this morning and you were absolutely sure, you were certain that your spouse or your parents or the host that you might be staying with hadn't laced it with poison or sprinkled it with dirt or put a laxative in it or something? Raise your hand on that. Okay, all right, again, all of us. How many of you are completely sure that the seat that you're sitting in will hold up under the weight of your benchmates? Now, everybody, raise your hand. Don't look around. I promise you, raise your hand on this one. It will be good for you. Okay, how many of you have faith that I will end this message by noon today? Everybody, raise your hand on this one, okay? So here's the point. Here's the point that I want to make. Every single person in this room, no exceptions, each one of us in this room has an amazing capacity for faith. What you just expressed was your faith in something. Every single one of us in this room has an amazing, an incredible capacity for faith, which is what I want to talk about today as I make the case for faith in God or for Christian faith. Now most of you would say, well, why do you need to make the case for faith? Because we're already people of faith. Well, I suspect that in this room there are people at all levels, at all positions of the journey of faith. Some of you are perhaps exploring faith. Maybe some of you are a little bit skeptical about faith. Others of you are in the faith journey, but there's always this next step of faith that we're being called to. No matter how much you already have the faith thing resolved in your life, there is yet a risk of faith that we're called to trust God, to know God, to go with God even more. And so I want to make the case today for Christian faith. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 is one of the outstanding verses, if not the most famous verse in the Bible on faith. And this is what the author says. Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Faith is being sure of what we hope for, certain of what we do not see. Now, this verse was originally written in what's called the Koine Greek, which in the first century was the common Greek, the everyday Greek of the Greek Empire. Now, I happen to have a degree in this language, and so I speak with a fair amount of confidence in saying to you today that the real sense, the truest sense of what the author is trying to say here as he describes faith is that faith is the reality of what is hoped for. Now, that might seem incongruent to some of you. Reality and hope don't really go together. But this author is saying that faith is the reality of what is hoped for, the proof of what is not yet seen. It's proof of the unseen. Authentic Christian faith is the present essence of a future reality. Christian faith, the present essence of a future reality. Just like the drinking water is safe from your faucet. Just like the food that you ate will not do you harm. Just like the seat that you're sitting on has structural integrity. You place faith in that, even though that may not come to pass, and yet you know, you have confidence that that is going to be your reality. That is faith. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6 says that without this kind of faith, it is impossible to discover God. It's impossible to know him. It's impossible to walk with him. It's impossible to obey him. Without this kind of faith, it's impossible to discover God. You've got to first believe that he exists. That's what the writer says, that if we come to God, we must believe that he exists and that he will reward those who seek him with a greater knowledge and the answers to what they're seeking for as they pursue God. That is the precondition for God revealing himself to you. As Anselm argued in the 11th century, Anselm of Canterbury came up with what is famously known as the ontological argument for God. And one of the things that he said was, you have to believe in order to know. You must believe in order to know. Now, that's a bit of a stretch for those of us who live in the Western world, in the modern Western world, because we say that belief comes from reason, that after the scientific method has been proved out, then we can have confidence in something, that we must see it, and then we can believe it. But Anselm said, no, that's not the way it is. There is a point that reason can only answer so many things, but there are thousands of things beyond reason's grasp that you won't know unless you take a step of faith. I believe so that I can know. I believe so that I can know. Now, Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 2 goes on to say this. It was by this kind of faith, that our spiritual ancestors won God's approval. And one of those spiritual ancestors was Abraham. He's the man from the Old Testament, the character that we've been studying now for several weeks. We're using his journey of faith. Remember, he stepped out. He wasn't a follower of God. He didn't necessarily believe as we do. But he stepped out to pursue God. And he went on a journey. And the New Testament says of this Old Testament character that he is our spiritual father. In other words, what is true of Abraham's life is true of our, what happened literally in Abraham's life is a picture of what God wants to happen in our life. And so we're going to see how this certainty of what we do not see, this confidence in the unseen, played out in Abraham's life, how he expressed belief in order to know. So I want you to turn, if you would, to the first book of the Bible, Genesis, which means the beginning, Genesis, first book in the Bible, to chapter 15. And this morning, we're going to read just verses 1 through 6. Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 6. If you don't have a Bible, obviously the verse has appeared on the screen behind me. And this is what it says. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Fear not, I am your shield and your very great reward. But Abraham said, Lord, what can you give me since I'm childless? Now, that was a big deal to Abraham because Abraham was concerned with his name. He was concerned with his legacy. He was concerned that his lineage would live on after him. And I think all of us probably have that concern as well. We want our, especially as you come into grandparenthood, you realize that your legacy is now living on. And so all human beings are concerned with that, but particularly in the ancient Near East, in the ancient Middle East, that culture was particularly concerned with having children that would live on and keep their name going after them. So he didn't have a child, and he says, Lord, what can you give me since I'm childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus. You have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Now, Eliezer was Abraham's chief steward. And by legal rights in the ancient Near East, he was next in line to inherit his master's wealth. If Abraham didn't have a child, didn't have a son, didn't have an heir, then next in line for the wealth, whatever wealth there was, went to the chief steward. So verse 4 continues. It says, then God said, no one else will be your heir, Abraham. You will have a son to inherit everything you own. Now remember that Abraham is 100 years old at this time. And God says, yeah, you'll have a son. Sarah is not too far behind. And God says, you're going to have a son together. They have no kids at this point, but God says, you will have children. Now, they don't have children. That's their reality. That is the visible. That's their visible. Okay, verses 6 and 7 continue. So God brought Abraham outside after Abraham kind of protested, I don't have kids. How is this going to happen? God brought him outside beneath the night sky, and he told him, look up into the heavens and count the stars if you can. Your descendants will be just like that, too many to count. And then verse 6, one of the great verses in the Bible, kind of the hinge of what we're going to talk about today. And Abraham believed God. He didn't have it yet. It wasn't visible yet, but he believed in order that he might know, that he might experience. Abraham believed God, then God credited it to him as righteousness on account of his faith. That is what faith is. That is looking past the immediate. That is looking past the seen. That is looking past the verifiable into the unseen and expressing confident trust. Now, let's unpack this passage. It contains several phrases that, in terms of the science of biblical studies, are categorized under the law of first occurrence. The law of first occurrence. That refers to the first time, the very first time, that a significant phrase or a significant word that appears, reappears throughout the Bible, the first time that it's used in the Bible. And that first time use really sets the pace or it determines how that word or that phrase will be used or is to be understood thereafter as it reappears. Now, in this one particular passage, there are four significant first use phrases. The first of these phrases is this: the word of the Lord came. The word of the Lord came. Now, the recurrence of this phrase in Scripture emphasizes the divine nature of the Bible, the authority of the Scripture, making it, in our affirmation of faith, our doctrinal affirmation, making the Bible unique among all the books in literature. It is God Himself speaking. It is God Himself taking the initiative to reveal Himself, to reveal His character, and to reveal His will to mankind, including His plan for you and for me. Now, that's important because, like Abraham, your faith journey must be rooted in divine revelation. Your walk with God, where you're headed with God, if you're going to grow in your faith, it must be rooted in the Word of the Lord, in the Bible, if it's going to be a faith journey and not a flawed journey. So this is a very significant phrase: the Word of the Lord came. The second phrase is fear not. Fear not. Now I'm going to come back to this momentarily and talk a little bit more, but this is the first time this phrase is used in the Bible. There are another 364 times that it's used, but here it's the first time, making the total number of times the Bible says fear not equal to the amount of days that we have within the year. I think that's pretty cool. God knew that we would need to be reminded every single day not to fear, to fear not. The third phrase is related to that. God follows up fear not with, I am your shield. I am your shield. Now, in countless variations, that same idea is used throughout Scripture. God is our refuge. God is our strength. God is an ever-present help in times of trouble. God is our high tower. God is our rock. God is our fortress. We are sheltered in the shadow of the Almighty. So God himself would be Abraham's shield. Therefore, Abraham had nothing to fear. He could fear not because God himself would be Abraham's shield. He had nothing to be afraid of, and guess what? Neither do you. I don't know what you're fearing this morning. I don't know what concerns and worries and fears that you brought into this place today, but you don't have to because God is your shield. And He Himself says to you, fear not. I am your shield. The fourth first-time phrase is, he believed God, that is Abraham, he believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. It put him in right standing with God. Now, it's this phrase that lit the fires, it's that very phrase that lit the fires of the Reformation in Martin Luther's heart. Now, Martin Luther came into this revelation. He had been a Catholic priest. He knew all about works. He knew all about the character that he needed to live up to in order to have God's favor. And he came into this revelation that it's not by works. It's not by obeying the law. It's not by his own character. It's by faith that he is made right with God. It is his belief that leads to understanding, that leads to revelation, that leads to experience. And so he stood at the Wittenberg door and he nailed those almost 100 theses, the 97 theses to the wall, chief of which is the just shall live by faith. And that is our theological touchstone as well, if you will. That is what our Protestant faith is built upon. It is by grace through faith that we are saved. And not of our works of righteousness. Now, our works of righteousness and our good character and our observance of the law of God comes out of that, but that doesn't save us. What saves us is and makes us right with God is our faith, our trust, our belief in God. Now, as amazing as those four phrases are, if you look at them in the whole context of Scripture, they're not the heart of this passage. It's their connection to the preceding events of Abraham's journey in Genesis 11, 12, and 13 that really is the focus here. So we're going to go back and we're going to look at that. Now, the passage that we read in chapter 15 starts off with after this or after these things. That's what that's referring to, after these events in Abraham's life that we find in chapter 11, the end of chapter 11, chapter 12, and chapter 13. And what we know so far about Abraham is that he has taken off, you know, on this pursuit of God, on this journey of faith. He's risked faith, trust in God, belief in God, to step out and to do some things that God said, you do it and then I'll show you. Do it. Go. Obey and then I will bless you. And he has boldly stepped out in risky faith most of the time. Some of the time, though, he has shrunk back in fear. At times, he's tailed off into humanistic thinking. And yet, at the end of the day, a few failures notwithstanding, he has not been derailed from his pursuit of God and his journey of faith. So we come back to chapter 15 after all of these things. We come to chapter 15 where God again appears to Abraham, this time in a vision. And God's first words to Abraham are what? Fear not. Abraham, don't be afraid. Now God is simply exposing what is already in Abraham's heart. Abraham, this is a night vision, and Abraham apparently is having a restless night. He's not sleeping very well because he's afraid. Now, what is he afraid of? Well, I think the answer to that is immediately before in chapter 14. If you look back just real quickly, he has just rescued his nephew Lot. Remember this? Most of you would remember this story. He has just rescued his nephew Lot by defeating four very powerful Canaanite kings whose marauding armies have captured him and his family and all that they own, all their stuff, along with just wreaking havoc in many of the cities along the Jordan Plain. So Abraham hears about this. He musters his men, kind of puts together a ragtag army, and they launch a surprise attack on all of these four kings and their armies, and they actually defeat them. Now, one of the beneficiaries of Abraham's victory was the king of Sodom. The king of Sodom, who now wanted to reward Abraham for his victory. Abraham's victory over these kings had blessed the king of Sodom because he got back his people. He had a chance to get back his city. And so I want to pick up the story in chapter 14, beginning in verse 21. Notice what the king of Sodom says. He says to Abraham, just give me my people, but keep the spoils for yourself. Now, back in those days in warfare, whoever won got everything. If you defeated an army, you got all of their equipment. You could take captive their soldiers. You could conscript them for your own. You could take all of their goods, all of the people that losing army had captured in previous wars would now be yours. All of this was the victor's. To the victor goes the spoils. And so he says, just give me the people that are mine, and you can keep all the spoils for yourself. But Abraham said, I've taken an oath before God that I will accept nothing belonging to you, not even a morsel, so that you will never be able to say, I made Abraham rich. I'll accept nothing but what my men have eaten and the share that belongs to the men who went with me. Just give them back their stuff and we'll call it even. We'll be okay. So coming out of that into chapter 15, what is there in that that creates fear in Abraham? Why would he be afraid? Well, there are four fears that Abraham's wrestling with. And these are four common fears, I think, to anyone, including you and me, as we're in the journey of faith. So let's talk about these. The first fear is what I would call the fear of, what have I gotten myself into? Have you ever said that? Have you ever stepped out in faith? Have you ever taken on something for God and then you said, oh my goodness, what have I gotten myself into? Abraham is afraid of these powerful kings that he's defeated, whose armies he embarrassed. He beat them in an ambush. He publicly humiliated their vastly superior army with just a handful of men. Now listen to this. Dictators don't take kindly to humiliating public defeats. They're not going to like it a whole lot. No doubt Abraham said to himself, oh man, what have I just done? I have opened up a can of worms here. I have stepped into a hornet's nest. He had stepped out onto a limb of faith, and then he sawed it off. And he's worried. And so he wants to maintain a low profile now. He's not strutting. He's not doing an end zone dance. He doesn't spike the ball. He wants to maintain a low profile, not receive the medal of valor that the king of Sodom now wants to give him. He's saying, look, let's just not talk about this. Let me go on my way and things will be fine. The thing is, whenever you step out in faith and you declare your intentions to follow God and you put a high degree, high level trust in God, your enemy won't like it. The enemy will not like it. Listen to this. Steps of faith are never without spiritual pushback. You're feeling something pushing back on you because you stepped out to follow God? Good. That means you stepped out in faith. You should get some pushback. Steps of faith are never without spiritual pushback. I was thinking back to, 10 years ago now, 12 years ago, when Linda and I and our family left Portland Christian Center. We were associate pastors here to go down to California. We took a church in the Bay Area. And that church had been, for a long time, talking about building a brand new, very big sanctuary that would cost millions of dollars. And they really needed to. But for years and years and years, all they did was talk about it. And so in my typical visionary bravado, I got there and I said, let's quit talking about it and do it. And so we launched into a campaign. And I remember thinking, what have I gotten us into? And there were a few people in the church that said, what have you gotten us into? We can't afford this. This is at a horrible time. This is impossible. And because it was such a large budget that we had to raise, we went into a building campaign. And I remember our consultant saying, there's no way that your church can reach the number that you've set out to raise. And I said, yes, we can. We will. We're going to do it. And he said, it's impossible, but let's give it a try. But you have to step out and you need to lead the way. And you need, Ray, you and Linda need to publicly declare what you are going to financially give to this campaign. And nobody else has to do that. But if I'm going to lead and I'm going to inspire others, we had to do that. And so Linda and I stepped out in front of the pulpit on a Sunday morning, and we committed thousands of dollars to this multi-million-dollar campaign, money that we did not have. I remember telling Linda what the figure was. We went through that. Hey, what do you, what's the figure you're thinking about? No, you tell me. So I went first. I said, I think we're supposed to do this. And she went, you do not understand our finances. We don't have that kind of money. I said, yeah, I know. It's a step of faith. And so I ultimately prevailed. She trusted me on that. But I felt like I had stepped out on a limb with Linda. I pulled her along. And then I cut off the branch. I cut off the limb. That's the fear of, oh my goodness, what have I gotten us into? What have I gotten into? Very common fear in the journey of faith. The second fear is the fear of what have I just given up? What have I just given up? Now, I suspect Abraham's second guessed the wisdom of turning down the king's offer of a fortune. The king went back to the palace wealthy. Abraham went back to the tent with Squat and Lot, his nutty nephew. And then he got home and he told Sarah what he had done, and she went, Abe, you're killing me. This was our opportunity to get out of the tent, buy a palace for ourselves. And what did you do? You went and gave away the opportunity of a lifetime. What were you thinking? What were you thinking? Doubt begins to rise in his heart. He probably said, man, did I just play the fool by giving up the wealth of Sodom? From that perspective, perhaps it seemed like that. So whenever you take a stand, a wave of doubt will hit you. Whenever you take a stand, a wave of doubt will hit you and will tempt you to question. A wave of doubt is sure to come. Now, that's not sin unless you give in to it. But doubt, listen to this, doubt is a form of fear. And whenever you take a step of faith, it will come and you will be tempted. I remember when we moved from Denver to come to Portland for the first time. It's in 1996. And as I think I told a little bit of the story a week or two ago, but I left my position at the church there, and Linda had been working as a chief operations officer at a very fast-growing company that was making lots of money and, you know, doing business all around the world. And she had a really good salary and a good position and was flying all around to help manage the business. She left that. I left my position. She left hers. And she took the role of the preschool director. I remember those days. And there was about 30 kids, you know, in the preschool. And so after we got here and she was down there doing her thing, I decided to go down from my office just to check on her, just to make sure she's okay. Because, you know, I'm leading, you know, out, and she's following, and she's just being a good sport about it. So I go down there, and Linda's standing there outside of the kids' restrooms. The doors are propped open. And she's standing outside of the restroom, kind of monitoring the kids, and she's dressed in her really nice business suit still. And she's preschool director. And I'm talking to Linda, and I hear this voice of a little boy come out of the boy's bathroom. Can I be a little earthy with you this morning and tell you what he said? Is it okay? Will you not be offended at this? I'm talking to Linda, and this little boy says, "Miss Linda, will you come in here and wipe my butt?" Sorry, you never heard that in church before. Won't hear it again. And I looked at Linda, and I said, "Are you okay? It is a long way from the boardroom to the bathroom, but you've made that journey." She was so heroic with it. But often we have that fear of, oh my goodness, what did I just give up in order to go to where God called me to go, and then he would show me what he was going to do. The fear of what have I just given up. The third fear is, have I misunderstood God's will? Have I misunderstood God's will? 10 years before, Abraham believed that God had told him to leave everything in Persia to go to Canaan, where he would give him many, many numberless descendants, numerous descendants. And that was a real leap of faith for Abraham. Remember, he's 90 years old at the time when God called him. Sarah is looking a little long in the tooth as well. They're well past the childbearing years. Now a decade later, Abraham is a centenarian. And there's no son, much less innumerable descendants. There's no son. And what happens when there's a delay between God's promise and its fulfillment is the temptation to question if I misunderstood God's will. There's a delay in the promise and its fulfillment. There's a delay. And the temptation is to say, did I miss God? Did I misunderstand God? Did God speak at all? That is the fear of missing God's will. And then the final fear I want to talk about, and we'll start to wrap this up. Don't say anything, all right? The fourth fear is the fear of, will God act in time, if at all? Will God act in time if I step out and I take a step and I trust him? Will he act in time? Will he act at all? That's why in chapter 12, remember last week, Abraham had fled during the time of famine. He fled Canaan to go to Egypt. God hadn't called him to Egypt. God had called him to Canaan, but a famine hit. And so Abraham is trying to help God out by helping himself. And now in chapter 15, Abraham's kind of starting to do the same thing again. He's starting to line up Eliezer to perhaps be the heir to his fortune and to carry his lineage on. Won't be the same, but at least, you know, it's an alternative. And then Sarah, even, you know, a couple chapters later, gets into the act as well, because she's now 90 years old and Abraham's 100 and there's no child. And she realizes this ain't going to happen. And so she takes her servant girl, Hagar, and she says, "Here, Abraham, let's have a child through her." And you know the result of that. They had a child, and we have been suffering the consequences of that throughout history in the conflict that we now see in the Middle East. Will God act at all? I better help God out. So, here's the question. If I were you, here's the question that I would be asking. Why didn't God just give Abraham what he had promised? And why doesn't God make things quick and easy for you? Why doesn't God make things quick and easy? Why does he delay? Why does God do that? Have you ever asked that question? God, how come? What's going on? Why did God help me out here? Why does God do that? I'll give you the answer. Maybe among other things, but here's a chief answer. God is always creating the conditions where he can manifest his glory in your life. He's always creating the conditions where he can manifest his glory in your life. And guess what? Really, you wouldn't want it any other way. What kind of faith is that? You wouldn't want it any other way. And neither would I. I don't want a risk-free faith. I don't want a sugar daddy deity in the sky who just gives me everything I want. I don't want a vending machine in the sky that gives me all of my desires and all of my wishes and all, you know. I don't want a God like that. I want a robust legacy of faith in an all-powerful God. Don't you? That's what I want. And that requires a whole lot of trust. An immense amount of trust. So in this gap between the promise and the fulfillment comes this universal dual encouragement where God says, do not be afraid. Number one, I'm your shield. And number two, I'm your very great reward. So with God as your shield, I don't know what you're fearing, but with God as your shield, friend, you are immortal until the day God says you're done with your earthly journey. You are immortal, and nothing can touch you. You are untouchable except that which comes to you through God and his permission for his purpose in your life. You are an immortal child of God. God is your shield. And if, like Abraham, you will embrace that truth by placing your faith in God, that will neutralize your fears. It will delete your doubts. It will deepen your experience of God. It will strengthen your walk of faith. Accept God by faith as your shield. But God is more than just a shield, as great as that is. He is your very great reward as well. That means he is the greatest treasure, the truest satisfaction that you will ever know in life. Better than all of the promises being fulfilled in your life, walking with God is the supreme blessing of faith. Your experience of God's presence will always be a far greater pleasure than even the joy of his promises fulfilled. It's okay to have his promises fulfilled. That's a wonderful thing. But even greater than that is the fact that he has come into your life and his presence is upholding you. And that was the turning point in Abraham's journey. When he turned his eyes off the problem, when he turned his eyes even off the promise, and he began to focus on the promiser, he entered into a dimension of faith for which he is famous and for which God says of him, I credit that to his account as righteousness. He is in right standing with me. And that's the critical, that's critical for your faith too. That's critical for your faith. When you turn your eyes away from the problems, and even when you turn your eyes off the promise, I'm not saying give up on it, but don't focus on the promise of God. Focus on the promiser. And when you do that, you will discover the evidence of things not seen. The unseen will become your reality, and you will stand in confidence that they are, even though they're yet future, they are as if they exist right now. There's a brilliant man by the name of Augustine. He lived in North Africa in a city called Hippo, and he described what we're talking about this way. I love this quote. Faith is to believe what we do not see, and the reward of this faith is to see what we believe. I believe in order that I might know. I believe in order that I might receive. James chapter 2 gives the New Testament commentary on the life of Abraham. And verse 23 says of this story, says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. He was declared to be in right standing with God. And then it adds, and Abraham was called God's friend. And Abraham was called God's friend. His greatest legacy isn't the results attained, with God. It's the relationship gained with God. And, friend, that can be your legacy of faith as well. Believe that you might know God in a deeper way.
Thank you for listening to the Portland Christian Center podcast. For more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Again, thank you for listening.